Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music. Hey everyone, welcome to the 133rd episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Aaron Goodmiller and Troy Smith. I'm Oren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Enlow.
Today we've got Andrew Allen and Jason Sondi. They're two of the people behind Short of the Week, and they co-wrote an article called Be Everywhere All at Once, and it's a great guide to the modern way that people are approaching short film distribution. So if you're curious about what to do with your short film, if you're thinking about where to start making a short film, if you want to know what film festivals accept short films that have premiered online, how to premiere your film online, all of that stuff, we go pretty deep with these guys about what Short of the Week is all about, where this article came from, the processes of programming for Short of the Week, and how it's given them the experience and insight to really kind of craft a new way of thinking about how to distribute your short film. So it's a great, great conversation if you are thinking about making a short or have already made one.
Yeah, these guys are like super legit. Andrew and Jason, I think Jason was like, he worked for Vimeo doing the staff picks. And what I like about the conversation is they're really all about like, how do you make a short and then use it to move your career forward? These guys are awesome. I actually spent, like right after we interviewed them, I spent maybe 5 hours on their website, shortoftheweek.com, watching like a bazillion shorts.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
You can literally spend like 3 months watching shorts on their site.
No doubt.
Have more to watch. But before we talk to Jason and Andrew, I wanted to remind everyone that we have a Patreon page. The address is patreon.com/justshootitpod. We have gotten a bunch of people on it. It's super exciting. And you patrons of ours are helping us pay our editors. You're helping us plan more live events, which we are going to do another one this year, right? Is that
the
plan?
Yeah, we've got December. An end of the year event coming up. We're already in the early stages of planning it.
Yeah, so check it out. It's a way you can show some support for us. You can give us $1 a month, $4 a month, whatever you feel like, or don't. And keep listening to the podcast. Keep emailing us your questions and your feedback. We've been interacting a lot with our listeners lately, and it's been really enjoyable. So that's all I got.
Great. Well, with that, let's hop into our conversation with the Short of the Week guys, Andrew and Jason. All right. Welcome, Jason and Andrew, to Just Shoot It. Thanks so much for connecting with us, guys.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's a real pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks for inviting us.
Well, the reason that we first reached out to you all is because beyond all of the awesome stuff that you both do at Short of the Week, which we can get into as well. You did a article, the pair of you made an article that kind of went like filmmaker viral, right? Called Be Everywhere All at Once, The Ultimate Guide to Festivals Online and Your Short Film Release. That's the sort of article you see kind of like passed around message boards and like your friends are all sharing it. Do you want to just kind of give us the log line of what Be Everywhere All at Once kind of means to you two?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've been fans of short film for a long time and filmmakers ourselves. And through Short of the Week, which has now been around for about 11 years, we've really seen the online short film industry grow up. And I think through that have just learned a lot about what this new avenue is opening up for filmmakers in terms of new opportunities. And so, you know, it's really, this piece was really kind of an encapsulation of the last decade or so of helping filmmakers launch their shorts online, helping them connect them with people in the industry, and then just getting feedback on what's working and what's not. And so, you know, we're regularly talking with filmmakers, and they're sort of regularly feeding back what their experiences are. And we just saw this big disconnect, I think, between what's traditionally been told to them and this new path that we're seeing. So I know that's longer than a log line, but we tried to kind of capture those ideas of how to get the most impact and impact that is meaningful for filmmakers, which tends to be more around developing new career opportunities. How can you optimize for that in your short film release?
Right. And do you guys, when you guys say new career opportunities, do you mean about having your short reach the right people or reach the most people?
I think that it ultimately is about reaching the right people, but by reaching the most people just through math, you know, you're more likely to have the opportunity to reach the right people. So there's a difference between, you know, quality of viewer versus quantity of viewer. And I think platforms like Short of the Week, where we have a mailing list that has a lot of fairly influential talent scouts and agents and industry people on it, is definitely something that we're proud of, and it's something that we encourage filmmakers to think about. But I don't think that the two are opposing. I think that if you aim for volume, because there is so much attention that's being placed on this ecosystem of content that's coming out direct online, you're likely to get that first goal of quality viewer, who is someone who can help your career as well.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And so just for our listeners that haven't read the article before, like, what about like the Sundance or the TIFF or the Con? Like, can you release your short online before it screens at one of those places?
Yeah, the short answer is yes, you can, but the real answer is it's complicated. We have a companion article that we released, or that we linked to, in the Be Everywhere All at Once piece that makes it really easy for filmmakers to look at 125 of the biggest film festivals in the world and to see what their premiere status restrictions are. And, you know, when we first did this piece, we did it in collaboration with a colleague of ours, Katie Metcalf, who's a short film programmer at Sundance, using a lot of her original research. And we were quite surprised at the time that 66% of these Oscar-qualifying film festivals had no explicit rule against your film being online before acceptance into their festival. And Sundance is a very high-profile example of that. We do a playlist every year of, you know, somewhere between 5 and 10 short films that are part of their official program, which are already released online by the time that the programming announcement comes out. But, you know, there are several high-profile film festivals, such as Cannes or Berlin, that will disqualify you from eligibility. So we encourage filmmakers to think about, you know, what is important to them, what their goals are for their release, and to strategize accordingly. And while I think the Be Everywhere All at Once article suggests that filmmakers should not place as much importance as they currently do on film festivals, we do try to make sure that we're taking a nuanced approach to tell filmmakers to think critically and to think strategically about, you know, what is the best path for their particular case.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that really struck me the most about this article, just kind of on a philosophical sense, is that so often I'm sure you're confronted with people who ask just for kind of like, what's the cut and dry advice? And the answer is always, it's complicated. But what this article does a really good job of reminding people of is that, you know, there's a lot of familiar ways to distribute a movie or a short, and that you really just have to question what are the specific goals that you have for yourself as a filmmaker, and also for the film specifically.
film festivals maybe are, in the worst case scenario, not the best place to for a ton of people to see your film necessarily, but they are, say, a good place to build a community and, you know, get to know other filmmakers and things like that. And I think that you do a good job of kind of laying all of those different aspects out.
Exactly.
I think that's really well put. Yeah. You know, I'm a frequent attendee of film festivals. I've been to Sundance the last 6 years. I go to South By. Andrew and I both get invited, you know, around the world to be on juries or to speak. And there's definitely a sense of community that develops around filmmakers that are doing the festival circuit at the same time. And that's incredibly invaluable. And
it's almost like a high school graduating class, you know?
It really is. It really is. And you end up getting to mingle with people like ourselves, with programmers. You know, landing a spot in a high-profile festival makes the rest of your festival run that much easier and more valuable as you're on the radar of a bunch of separate feeder festivals or lower-tier film festivals that program off of the big premier festivals. So there's a lot of value in it. But what I've also seen is that it, in some sense, is an insular community. I go to these screenings at top-notch premier film festivals, and I go to the short screenings, and I don't see a lot of agents or managers or producers or development people. And the audiences really aren't generally that big. So being on Short of the Week, in your first handful of days of online release, you will reach a larger audience of people seeing your film than probably your entire festival run put together. And that's a fact. And it's also much easier to reach decision makers because you're not making it difficult on them. In the same way that scripts can travel through informal networks of agents and producers kind of friction-free, your film can do that same way when, you know, a junior person in their office whose job it is to scout Short of the Week or scout statistics can freely share with an executive in their office, or it can be sent through email. There's a certain removal of friction that really helps a filmmaker get their work seen, not only then by mass audiences, but by also the kind of key decision makers that can help move their career forward.
Yeah, I think that's so something that like our listeners really need to hear. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten an email from someone, even like there's two Kickstarters that I contributed to for short films, and they'll email all the time saying, hey, we're going to be at this film festival, we're going to be at this shorts fest or this thing, like you should come see it. And my answer is always like, can't you just send me a link? Like, I do not want to go to a film festival to watch your one short that's probably among a bunch of different shorts that I'm even less interested in. So if you can send me a link, I will watch almost anything. You know?
As a slight tangent, I would even go so far as to say, don't put a password on your short. You know, like, don't give me like a case sensitive in joke password. Just send me a private link. Like, mistyping your, you know, in joke a couple times and just could be the difference between me deciding to watch your film or not, or watching it with a, you know, without being grumpy.
Yeah, I think, you know, something that we've done is we've taken, you know, I've done marketing and other roles, and I think some of this is just kind of taking some, you know, finding that balance between like there are places where you want to exhibit your work, but then there are also places where it needs to sort of function in almost more of a sort of marketing capacity, and that's all about reducing friction and having the right sort of message and really packaging your film well to make those types of rounds. And that's something I think it's another section in this article, which is, it's not easy to do. You know, not every filmmaker is an amazing marketer at heart. And we've really felt that it's sort of unfortunate that a lot of the message, I think, over the last, you know, 8 or 10 years or so, especially with the rise of social media, has been, in order to get any sort of impact online, you really have to do it yourself. And while that was sort of empowering for a while, like the structures of the online world have built themselves up in such a way that that's become much more difficult now. And the truth is that you shouldn't have to be, you know, a digital marketing guru, as we say, to be a great filmmaker, right? You should just be able to make great films. And hopefully that's part of the role that we've tried to step in and take, is that we can help package your film and get it out to audiences and get it out to decision makers.
Just to play the listener at home who didn't get into a top tier festival and maybe even didn't get accepted to Short of the Week, right? I think there is a little bit of a question where, you know, the thoughts of don't build an audience or securing a fancy premiere, that becomes a little bit more frustrating when you're not getting accepted to the South Bys and the Sundances and the TIFFs of the world. Do you have any thoughts for those filmmakers? You know, the ones who are maybe not quite ready for the prestige or haven't been accepted to that party yet?
Yeah, I would say I think it's important at whatever level you're at to get honest feedback on where you are and what you're doing. And that is something that we do actually offer at Short of the Week. One thing that when we take submissions, if you pay a little extra, someone on the curation team will actually provide some detailed notes on like what's working, what's not working in your film. That's one way.
Sorry to interrupt, but I'm just curious. Can you give like an example of what a note would be and like how detailed, like a page worth of notes?
It's like 2-3 paragraphs worth. But it depends on the length of the short as well. And so it tends to be around, you know, we look at like the craft of the film, obviously. Sometimes there are obvious things done wrong there. But then it's also like the character arc or the story arc. And so we try and get as nuanced as we can. The really difficult ones are sometimes, and we see this a lot, and it's something that I think you have to find a way as a curator to kind of fight through. But something that we see a lot is there are a lot of like well-executed films that just don't add up to anything that significant in the end, and those are the hardest ones to get feedback on, because it's like you executed a film really well, but sometimes it just doesn't have that special little something to make it noteworthy.
Is that different than not having a good ending?
It's definitely different. I mean, a sort of ambiguous ending, or like you can still have a good ending, but sometimes like, you know, I'm sure you guys have done it. You've seen a film, whether it's a short or a feature, but at the end of it, you're like, I think I've probably watched the same film like 5 or 6 different times already. And it feels very familiar. And you're like, well, something that we try and do, at least at Short of the Week, is we're always looking for what we call innovative storytelling, or people who are pushing the boundaries in some ways. And that's either through like new techniques, or new styles, new formats, but it's also through like characters that we haven't seen before, perspectives that we haven't seen, or a sort of style of dialogue that we haven't seen. And so that's, you know, that's something that we're particularly looking for. But you know, just to get back to that original question, I do think, you know, you have to put it out there in some way to get feedback. You know, whether that's like a local film festival or putting it on Vimeo yourself, you do have to get it out there, because we get a lot of people submitting to Short of the Week. We only accept about 4%. And more that 4% that we do accept are people that have submitted to us in the past. And so what we always try and say, it's cliche, but, you know, filmmaking is a bit of a journey. Like, you have to really learn it and learn yourself and learn your own voice through it.
Yeah, no, that is interesting. Matt and I were talking about before we started talking to you about how we've seen a lot of our friends that have gotten into Sundance or gotten into South By, they've been to those festivals a bunch of times, they met people, they saw what works there and what doesn't work there.
Yep.
And they didn't just like make a short film in a vacuum and then got really depressed when it didn't get into Sundance. Yeah, I'm looking, so to submit to Short of the Week, it's $30.
Yeah.
And it's under 40 minute films. So your acceptance rate as of now is around 4%.
Yeah, it's about 4%.
It's like a like Harvard.
It's just there's so much great work coming out, and we have to find ways to keep raising our standards because we can only publish and promote so much. You know, we could accept three times as many, but then the individual acceptance, we wouldn't be able to promote each individual film nearly as much. So we tried to maintain a level, but that means we have to keep raising the bar.
Cool. So I guess, I mean, probably the big question that you get asked all the time, or some version of this question is like, what are kind of the no-nos that you see in short films that people should avoid? So just to give you guys a little bit of background, a lot of our listeners are newer filmmakers, people that just graduated film school, people that have worked in reality TV and now are trying to move into narrative, kind of, you know, and people that are making short films, submitting them to festivals. Like, what do you guys have any kind of general tips of things to avoid or do?
Do you want to take it, Jason? I've got the article. We actually have an article on this too, but the 15 Things Wrong with Your Short by Ivan.
Damn, you guys have written an article about every good question.
Yeah, that one's a little bit cheeky, but you know, it's an example of some sort of inside baseball, the kind of conversations that we have with other programmers at film festivals, other online sites, kind of repeating either motifs or styles that we just keep seeing and sort of bug us a bit. For example, there's certain types of stories that you know, when you get over 3,500 submissions every single year, you start to notice these weird similarities, like, man, there's an awful lot of movies about hitmen, and they're always like sad and wrestling with whether they're good people or not. It's like, well, no, you kill people for them, and you're not a good person. There's also, you know, a surprisingly huge subgenre of very bad black and white noir homages. You know, it's not to say that you can't make a good one of those. Like, there's no hard and fast rule. Like, every rule is made to be broken. But, you know, if you're trying to stretch your wings or you're trying to prove something, like, maybe don't do that.
I love this one. Your film is good considering you made it for $20 or you shot it on an iPhone.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we get a lot of people who say that, like it's something to their benefit. Like, it's something that we're going to be like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, just to commiserate, we definitely get that as well. We get a lot of pitches like, hey, we made this for $0 in 36 hours, and isn't that incredible? And it is. I don't want to put people down who, you know, it's hard to make a movie, so, like, go for it. But, like, the reason that people love movies is not because they were shot cheaply or quickly. You know, you don't walk out of a movie theater and say, boy, that's my new favorite movie. They shot it so fast.
That's definitely, yeah, that's our stance as well. I think it's to blame. I go back to the beginning of the decade when a lot of the trends that we're seeing that are kind of mature online right now were first being formulated, and we saw sci-fi films like Fede Alvarez's Panic Attack. You know, at the time he was a complete unknown. He was a university kid in Uruguay, and he makes this CGI sci-fi 2-minute thing at home on his computer using, you know, commercially available software. And that ended up being a big headline. That was one of the reasons that piece goes viral. Or, you know, the first time that with DSLRs you could get shallow depth of field and get that sort of cinematic look, there was a certain thrill to, like, oh yeah, you can do this cheap. Like, I don't need to rent a 16-millimeter camera, and I don't need to process film, or even, like, I don't need $3,000 of glass with some sort of intermediary between cinema glass and my, like, DX100 or something like that to get a really polished look. And so at times those kind of things have worked to the PR or publicity advantage of filmmakers, but it's just not really the case anymore. Like, everybody and their mother is getting an Alexa on the weekend from their local shop. And I think that's one of the really trickiest things, having done this for over 10 years, I would say, is to a certain extent, you used to be able to prejudge shorts on superficial qualities of cinematography and overall image look, and that's really not the case anymore. It's incredibly simple to get a good looking film now. So now that your judgment has to go back to kind of classic things like, well, is this well written? Is this well acted? Is the point of view something that's worth telling in the first place? So.
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing is, like, there's the thought of, like, oh, a DSLR or a cheap camera or a fast camera or, you know, whatever gear you've got, it's just fundamentals, right? And so that's freeing for people in that, like, if they've got an Alexa lying around, you know, great, you can go shoot with that, pull those favors. But if you don't, that also doesn't matter, you know, and can be exciting as well. But the story and the characters are always going to be the thing that everybody cares about.
Right. And I think, fortunately, as the standards have gotten higher, we're seeing gear culture recede a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember in the early days of my curating Vimeo staff picks, people like Philip Bloom and No Film School, like, it was incredible amount of focus on gear. And maybe I'm just a little bit removed from those communities anymore, but I feel like more and more people are talking about storytelling and writing and crafting good films and are obsessing less about, you know, what kind of lenses you're using, what kind of nonlinear editor you're using, that sort of thing.
Well, I think the other thing that is probably related to that is it used to be in the days of the DVX-100 that we're all like trying to make our stuff look like Hollywood movies. But to your point of everyone has an Alexa now, like, we literally are using the same cameras on our $2,000 short as like they're shooting the Avengers with.
Yeah.
So it's not, it becomes a non-issue.
Anymore. Yeah. And
it's not an excuse of like why your movie isn't good because you didn't have the same equipment that the Hollywood people have.
Exactly.
Because you pretty much do.
And I think if we think about technology trends, like, that's only going to continue. Like, it's going to get easier and easier. And, you know, you have people shooting films on iPhones now that look amazing. They look great with the stabilization and 4K and all that. And so it's only going to keep getting easier and easier. And, you know, people are always ask us a similar question. I think sometimes what the analogy I like to bring is just writing. You know, like, who cares if you wrote an amazing script? You know, who cares what application you used or what amazing typewriter you used? Is it a good story? And, you know, the tools are going to get easier and easier to use and easier to make better and better looking stuff. And ultimately what really stands out is great story in the end. And that's what we've always tried to focus on, I think, at Short of the Week. Is really trying to find good stories that hopefully transcend some of that, you know? So oftentimes we'll go back and watch films from like eight, 10 years ago, and they'll still look as fresh as they did then. We try and, like, as much as you can, put story at the forefront, because technology trends are going to change.
So obviously another trend we've seen, you know, that gear is becoming less interesting, but obviously, over the past 2 years, like, there's been a big push for diversity, and I think the kind of white male director guy that used to write a short about a person that was just like him is maybe now writing a short about an older Native American woman, or kind of trying to inject a new point of view that people haven't seen that much before. Like Jason was saying, like, is this a point of view that we care about that feels fresh? But a lot of times it seems to maybe fall flat on its face because it's, you know, the opposite of authentic. Like, is this a trend you guys are noticing at all? And what do you think about it?
I think that it is something that's on a lot of people's minds. I don't see a lot of what it sounds like you're describing, which is, you know, people trying to speak for vantage points that they don't have authenticity with. I think this is something that's always affected unexpected documentary a little bit, which is that you do get adventurers who like to go overseas and sort of drop in for a couple of weeks and shoot a place. And to a certain extent, no matter how much sensitivity you're able to corral, it's hard to represent that authentically. But I can't say that I'm seeing a lot of that in scripted work, where, for example, you know, white bro director is trying to suddenly write trans characters or anything like that. What I have seen a lot more, and what we think is really exciting, is that we're seeing a lot more trans directors just writing about trans issues, or people of color speaking about what's going on in their communities, or speaking about familiar stories from kind of new perspectives from what is an underrepresented viewpoint. And I think that's really cool. And it's one of the great things about shorts. It's why we think that shorts, why we kind of think passionately about championing shorts, because, you know, a lot of the blockages in mainstream entertainment have come from these sort of structural hierarchies, but you don't need to get anyone's permission to make a short film. You just get some friends, you get some gear, you put together a little bit of money, and anyone from any kind of background can make them. And I think that's really exciting, because we're getting a lot of new kinds of stories from a lot of new perspectives. And that's one of the reasons why we think that the work that we do at Short of the Week is important, is to try to serve a bit of a bridge to connecting these new kind of diverse filmmakers to the kind of entrenched established industry.
Right. Yeah, that's really helpful. And it's good to hear that you're not seeing that. I'd heard, you know, a couple other programmers talking about that type of thing, where people are trying to kind of be like falsely diverse and it falling apart. Like, do you need to find a new angle on how you're pitching yourself or on your point of view to make you stand out more? I mean, I think kind of the cliche thing in Hollywood is a bunch of people, you know, that are actors are making a short film about an actor's life in LA. And it's like you said, we've seen that short so many times that we really aren't interested in it unless it's kind of told in a super different way, you know?
I think the challenge has been and always will be standing out, period. And I think that, you know, look, the most difficult thing to do with your short is to get anybody to care at all, to get your film seen. That's kind of, you know, one of the true tenets behind the Be Everywhere All at Once strategy. It's like, it's really difficult to get anybody to give a damn about your creative work. There's so much professionally produced content out there that is really, really good. So why should people care in the first place? And to that extent, it's not so much a hindrance that you are coming from a background or a perspective that we've already seen before, because the real challenge is to tell interesting, engaging stories. And I think there's a certain amount of voice and creativity and innovation that is inherent in one's ability to stand out and tell good stories that is sort of timeless. So I don't think it's more challenging than it was before. I just think it has always been very challenging.
Right. But it is, I guess, one of those things, like you're saying, that it used to be that if your short just looked really good, or you had access to the equipment or a celebrity actor or something, that's like what set you apart. But now that playing field has kind of been evened out, and now it's going deeper. I mean, I think it's awesome. Just like browsing through Short of the Week right now, it's like, you know, every single one of these shorts, like I could spend like a month just like watching these shorts. They all look super unique in a way that probably was not the case like 5 years ago. So yeah, it's exciting. And
you can browse by country. You can, we have a channel for female filmmakers if you want to look at films directed by female filmmakers, LGBT. And so there's, you know, exactly as you're saying, like lowering the barrier with the tools, but also lowering the barrier with distribution, being able to put it online, means that suddenly, you know, it's the things have been opened up for people in a way that they just never have been before. And I think that's why we're starting to see a lot of new voices from all over the world, all sorts of different backgrounds that we haven't seen before.
Well, and the thing that I like about Short of the Week in a kind of different context is that you two get to speak from a level of authority because of, in terms of like what feels familiar or what feels played out or what we've seen before, because you all watch a bajillion shorts every day, right? Like you said, like 3,500 shorts come into the website a year, right? So, so with that sort of breadth of knowledge, right, it's much easier to spot trends and to see what's familiar or what's not. And so I think listeners at home will think like, oh, well, how, you know, what, I have a lot of ideas. What's the one that's going to stand out? That can be hard to pick, right? But it could be as simple as going to Short of the Week and seeing, you know, what people are doing. If you see, you know, a trend, like that becomes apparent, basically. And so you don't have to be a film programmer. You don't have to be a showrunner reading samples all the time to see the trends that are happening amongst filmmakers. What's zeitgeisty right now, and what are the things that maybe you want to shy away from because we've seen them too many times?
Yeah, I think that's well said. And, you know, it actually is a little bit surprising to me how few filmmakers who want to make a short film actually watch a lot of short films. You know, they're all Tarantino buffs, or they, you know, subscribe to Filmstruck and they think of themselves as cinephiles. And yet very often you'll talk to them and realize that they don't actually watch that much of what their peer group is making. And they don't watch a lot of shorts, even though they are writing or directing a short script. And the mediums are different. You know, there's an art to a good short film that is very different than feature film or episodic. And it's something that I think it behooves aspiring filmmakers to realize. And you see, one of the big things that we sort of rail against is, you know, people making these 20-minute short films where they're trying to cram all three acts of their feature script into that sort of compressed timeline.
It's a rushed feature, not a short.
Yep. Or they only take one act of their feature and they forget to tell an actual full story. It's all set up with no payoff, or, you know, the timing is all wrong because you are trying to get to some sort of climactic event without having put in the work in character development. So, I encourage everybody, watch more Short of the Week.
Yeah, and I think that's a piece of advice that a lot of people get is, like, why don't you make a short that is like a scene from your feature, or that you can take to the film festival and sell it as a feature or a TV show? And it's hard to do that because, like you said, it might be a good scene, but it's not a good short.
I mean, it's something that we recommend to people, which is before you put your film online, before you put the effort in presenting yourself to both audiences and industry, know what you want to pitch. It's a case that happened to us. You know, Andrew and I, we collaborated on an animated short film, 8 years ago now, the Thomas Beale Cipher, and we didn't think that it was anything special, and we didn't get into really high-quality film festivals, but we put it online, and it ended up being a real surprise hit, and I think we ended up taking, like, maybe 20 generals after that, and everybody was like, what, do you have a feature script for this? And we're like, no. Do you have other ideas that you want to pitch? And I'm like, well, we didn't know this was going to happen. And no, we don't really consider ourselves filmmakers like that. So whether it's an adaptation of your short or whether it's something else, you know, you should have something that's reasonably in good state and that you can polish up and you can be ready that when you do get that call, you have something to pitch. Because we hear from our filmmakers who we feature on Short of the Week, you know, even if they have played A-list festivals and had a long festival run, they generally get more generals off of being online in that first week than they get through their entire festival run. And so, you know, I don't have any sort of precise numbers, but I would guess that maybe 5 to 6 sort of industry meetings would usually arise out of being featured on the site. So
that's awesome. Is there, do you have any other kind of notable success stories or people that like had a short on Short of the Week and then directed like a Marvel movie or anything?
We haven't quite gotten there yet. I think what's been pretty fascinating is, you know, as Andrew said earlier, filmmaking is a journey. And a lot of the filmmakers that we curated in the early days at the site are just now sort of advancing to those sort of privileged positions. In the Be Everywhere All at Once article, we highlighted, you know, just a handful of interesting success stories from recent times. So the sci-fi movie Kin, which was in theaters this past month, was based off of a short film that we featured on the site from Josh and John Baker. We've been longtime proponents of the filmmaking duo, the Daniels, who've been featured on the site multiple times. And they did Swiss Army Man with Daniel Radcliffe, which A24 bought and released.
They also did the Olympics commercial, which is amazing. The Nike.
That's right.
Spot, right?
That's right. And last I heard from them, they had signed on with the Russo brothers to do a big budget original sci-fi film.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Jordan Vogt Roberts was a Short of the Week award winner, I think back in 2011, 12, something like that, for a really brilliant short film called Successful Alcoholics. And he most recently directed Kong Skull Island.
That's awesome. So you guys are the gatekeepers of Hollywood.
You know, we're in the interesting spot of trying to be modest. I do think that we make a difference. But at the same time, you know, we're not working as a management company or an agent. We're not packaging and, you know, really taking our filmmakers out and having them do the rounds. So, you know, there's only a certain amount of credit that we can take. I think first and foremost, it's these filmmakers' talent. And I do believe that talent rises. It's impossible in my mind to continue to make really good, really interesting work and not have people eventually take notice. But yeah, I think this is something that Andrew and I have both talked about as being something that we want to do more of, to be more explicit in using the connections and the kind of taste-making appeal that Short of the Week has within industry, because we hear from industry and we know that they are paying attention. And can we be more explicit in leveraging that to the benefit of the filmmakers that we feature. I think that's something we're going to be doing in the future.
Right. And I feel like the Vimeo staff pick or Short of the Week is kind of a little bit of like the director's equivalent of like what the blacklist is for screenwriters, which is awesome. It's like it is this tool that lets just normal people have access to the right eyeballs, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's really great to hear from, again, our alums going out to the film festivals and stuff like that and seeing the sort of warmth that people have towards us and this brand that we've been able to build up. It's really encouraging.
Right. So we've had, like, in the past, we've had a couple video essayists on the podcast that, you know, do very well-done YouTube videos breaking down like why a script works or doesn't work or why a movie is good or bad. And they always get asked the question of like, you've analyzed so many movies, like when are you going to make your own movie? And I know, Jason, you mentioned you guys made that animated short 8 years ago. But being that you're pretty much like experts on how not to make a short film and how to make a short film, is there another collaboration in your future? Or is either one of you interested in directing short films?
I mean, I wouldn't count it out entirely, but we're definitely, I think, finding... if that short taught us anything, it was really that maybe we had better skills on the sort of curation and promotion side. So I think, you know, that's where we're focusing right now. But I won't count it out, you know. Maybe someday we might jump in and see if we can do sort of what Jason was alluding to and to help great work get made. I don't know if that means we have to be a director, but, you know, maybe in more of a producer role. But, yeah, it's something that we love to kind of keep one foot in the production world.
Yeah, I think, you know, shortly after that film got released, Andrew, you know, ended up co-founding his own technology company. And shortly after that film got released, I got hired as a curator at Vimeo. And then we were both running Short of the Week still as sort of side hustles. So time has been limited, but I definitely think that after all this film watching that I've done and all this criticism that I've done and thinking critically about the work that I see, that, yeah, I definitely have a great film in me. It's just gotta find that time and gotta take that leap. And I don't have to take the ego hit of having to make something bad if I continue to kind of sit on the sidelines for a little longer.
Right. Yeah. I feel like if I was in your guys' position, I would like be discouraged from making a short film, because you see all these insanely good short films with like great performances and great cinematography and great concepts. And it's like, the short that I was going to write about my stressful morning just doesn't hold a candle to any of these stories. It's like almost intimidating to be exposed to all this good content, you know?
Yeah, I can sympathize with that feeling, no doubt.
So maybe our listeners should avoid Short of the Week. Is that what you're saying, guys?
Just avoid becoming a curator or a critic, perhaps, because people often move from the profession into a critic, but they rarely go the other way.
That's not true. You have all those French New Wave guys.
Yeah. Didn't Ebert write Beyond the Valley of the Dolls 2? I think
that's correct.
I think he did. He wrote like one kind of trashy exploitation movie.
Well, even in our kind of contemporary space, I think you see that Ain't It Cool News guy, Massa Worm. You know, he ended up scripting Doctor Strange, right?
Oh, is that right?
So I think that was pretty heartwarming to us folk who write about film to see, you know, someone from the geek web go ahead and make good.
So guys, that was that's great. I think I'm certain a ton of our listeners, the last question they really need an answer for is how do they submit their film to Short of the Week?
Just come on over to shortoftheweek.com/submit and submit your film. It's $30 for a submission. If you want some feedback, that's a fee on top, but we'll give you some quality feedback from one of our top curators.
And I highly recommend you read their article, 15 Things Wrong with Your Short Film, before you submit, because it might
absolutely
save you $30.
Might be too late. Maybe you should read that article while you're writing.
Read it now. Why not?
Well, you can at least remove the list of meaningless laurels.
That one gets us every single time.
Or add color back in. Or get a sound mix, you know? All those things can save your film in post, or at least give it a chance.
Awesome. Well, we'd love to talk with you guys about unpaid endorsements.
Unpaid endorsements.
I can go first.
Okay.
You know, I think one of the things that running our own website is important is learning a little bit more about the larger industry and what kind of trends are going on in technology. And I think a lot of what's on everybody's mind right now is this disruption that's happening with digital subscription platforms like Netflix and Amazon. So I know Andrew and I both subscribe to a tech newsletter called Stratechery from Ben Thompson. And while he doesn't really focus on media primarily, there's a lot of good information in that. But even more recently, I've been finding the writing of a fellow named Matthew Ball, who does original analysis on technology, on entertainment companies for a website called ReadDef, to be really fascinating. And he wrote, I think in the last 2 or 3 months, like a multi-part analysis of Netflix that I think was one of the most insightful pieces that I've read about the company. So Matthew Ball at ReadDef, he has a whole bunch of articles that analyze Amazon Prime's strategy, HBO's strategy, Netflix, the new Disney subscription platform, and I found his work to be really enlightening.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Cool.
Well, on that, Jason will give you the work. I'll give you the play here. And so a show that I'm a huge fan of and was last year, was my favorite show last year, and they came out with the season 2 this year, is a series on Netflix called American Vandal. And it's getting more popular now, but I'm still surprised at how many people haven't watched it. But if you haven't seen it, it's just an amazing mockumentary that starts with a very kind of ridiculous, childish premise, and then takes it in very interesting, deep ways. And so by the end of the season, you've kind of taken a look at youth culture and media, and particularly how social media plays in with that in a very, very interesting way. I think it's doing some of the most interesting writing in television right now, under a very silly premise of a whodunit around who is the turd burglar.
Yeah, a tiny self-promotion, but if you're interested in hearing how that show came to be, the creator and director Tony Ascenda has been on our podcast and gives pretty much the breakdown of how he came up with the idea, from coming up with the idea to selling it to making it. Check out that episode, one of our past episodes.
It's one of my very favorite episodes. It's really great.
I'll have to listen to that.
Yeah, it's it will make you not like Tony that much, because he pretty much like came up with the idea like one morning, mentioned it to someone that night, and like in the way he tells the story, it seems like a week later it was like sold to Netflix. it was much more complicated, and he's obviously like very talented, but it's just kind of like a really good example of like perseverance and just being like sharing your ideas with the world and testing them out and seeing what happens with them. Cool. Well, Matt, you got anything?
Yeah, I actually, inspired by this conversation, I'm going to pull an old favorite that I believe was a short of the week, or maybe a Vimeo staff pick, but I saw it at Palm Springs, so I'll do a two-parter actually. Killer, the short film Killer, by Matt Kasman, is a great, concise, stylized, hilarious dark short that I don't want to give too much away. It's like a little not safe for work, but it's about a little boy who has a misunderstanding about the way that masturbation works, and terrible hilarity ensues. But it's called Killer, by Matt Kasman. We'll have a link in the show notes. And then also, it made me think of Palm Springs, which is a great short film festival. So if you are in the greater Los Angeles area and have the opportunity to go out there, it's like scrolling through Short of the Week, but in a movie theater. So that's a nice little short-focused festival, basically.
Yeah, Matt Kasman is great. We featured Killer on Short of the Week, so you can definitely watch it there. And we also have an older film of his, which if you're a big fan of his, maybe you have, and you haven't seen this one, you should check it out. It's on Short of the Week as well, called Flagpole. And if you Killer, I think you'll like Flagpole as well.
Well, my endorsement is an Instagram account. I think, so the guy that runs it, his name is Mike Dempsey, and the account is @MikesButt, MikeSbutt. And I'm pretty sure Mike Dempsey is roommates with Jess Dunlap, a DP that Matt and I have both worked with a lot. But he's a director also, but he takes these photographs, and they're all practical, and they're just, like, insane of people just in weird positions, like smashing against walls and, you know, hanging from basketball hoops and floating and falling down stairs. And he a lot of times will post kind of, like, I think this might be more on Facebook, but, like, his behind the scenes of just, like, seeing his, like, models, like, jump up in the air as he's, like, taking their still photos. But check it out, at Mike's Butt. And he's also part of that crew that makes At Kirby Jenner, which is the Lost Jenner brother, which is another Instagram account that is awesome. So I was working on a treatment that had, like, a bunch of kind of magical moments, but happening in like natural, like urban environments. And I was going through his Instagram account to see if I could find some cool images. And there are way too many of them, but check it out.
Awesome. Well, Jason and Andrew, where can listeners find out more about you if they want to keep track of what's happening on Short of the Week and all of the other things that you do?
The best thing to do is to go to Short of the Week and sign up for our newsletter. You can get our daily reviews into your inbox, either daily or in a weekly digest. And if you want to catch up with us on social media platforms, we are at Short of the Week, all one word, on most major platforms, so Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, the whole bunch. That's right.
And we are also on YouTube. So we have a YouTube channel that we're starting. I know, we're starting to grow the YouTube channel. Just search for Short of the Week and we should pop up.
Well, awesome. Well, if you want to find out more about us and the podcast, you can follow us on all of social medias at Just Shoot It Pod. You can go to our website, justshootitpod.com. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Smitey Pyleg.
And I'm at Mr. Matt Enlow. This episode was produced by Madeline Rosewatt. This episode was edited by Jay McAuliffe. And the music you're listening to right now was provided by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar.
And our webmaster is Ewan Williams.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.